Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650, Friday edition of the show. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Strands, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and I have a feeling lots of you will have lots of thoughts today. So hit us up early and often to the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. We were chatting with Gemma yesterday, and she said she was going to the hotel to cover the horse. I wonder which was more entertaining, the horse or the game last night for Gemma. Because, boy, that was an ugly one at Rogers Arena from a Canucks perspective.
I don't even know what to say.
Well, we'll find a way to say something about it. We're going to switch things up a little bit from our normal guest lineup on a Friday. The Canucks are practicing. They're getting on the ice right now at UBC. So after he covers practice at 1:30, Brendan Batchelor will join us, and we'll see if anything interesting comes out of that practice out at UBC, which means...
I would think it will.
We'll see.
It better be.
We've thought that before, and then it hasn't, but
no,
we'll see.
Today's a consequences day,
clearly. You would think so. And that means Dmitry will go at 1 o'clock. So 1 o'clock, Dmitry Filipovich from the Hockey PDO cast. 1:30, our pal, Brendan Batchelor. Two of our, I would say, the closest friends of the show.
Unless I'm forgetting anyone. Yeah. They're show besties?
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Unless I'm forgetting anyone, and I apologize if I am. But anyways, what a final hour
Books.
Of the show. Yeah, that's true.
Books.
That's true.
Books belongs on the bestie list.
I love Books. Guy's a beauty.
Yeah.
Anyways... So we got a lot coming up, and of course, a lot to get into from last night. Let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks. It's today, November 15th, and the headline is, oof, the Canucks get embarrassed again at home, this time losing 5-2 to Bo Horvat and the Islanders. Started with some positivity. Really cool moment. Jonathan Lekker-Mäki opens the scoring with his first NHL goal, and it was an awesome one, an absolute rocket from the flank, off the rush, off a JT Miller pass. Really, really cool moment. His parents are in the stands to see it. That's awesome. After that, it was a dismal, dismal effort by the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, I don't know that we need to go through kind of each goal and where it went wrong and all that. We can get into that throughout the course of the show for sure, but I also think, you know, part of the headline here is what happened after the game, which is the head coach of the Canucks, Rick Tocchet, beginning his post-game media conference, preemptively making a statement saying, do not ask me about individual players tonight, and also apologizing repeatedly, multiple times, apologizing to the Canucks fans for the duds, his words, that they've been laying on home ice. And of course, this is, you know, coming shortly off the heels of the 7-3 Edmonton Oilers loss, 6-0 to the New Jersey Devils. You go back to opening night where they blow a lead against the Calgary Flames. There have been a string of really tough to watch performances on home ice. That one, honestly, that might be...
Oh, that was the cake.
That might be the worst performance of the Rick Tocchet era for the Canucks. It was so bad.
Maybe that game in Seattle, that 4-0 win in his second game. But yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to go back multiple years to get something worse than that. Even when they were up 1-0, the Islanders were just stringing together these heavy shifts below the hash marks. And the Canucks had no answers, no ability to move the puck. They were getting outworked. They lost every battle. The level of attention to detail from the Canucks was abysmal. Like, there were so many entry opportunities or exit opportunities, excuse me, where wingers were straight up on the wrong side of the puck along the wall. Like, you don't see that at the NHL level. Honestly, you don't. So I find it inexplicable. Okay.
Like, that's a good word for it.
They're inexplicable.
Like, because there's a lot of details you can pick about this team and say, like, well, are they going to struggle here? You know, how much is the shooting percentage going to regress?
How much are they going to generate without Quinn Hughes on the ice?
Sure. But none of that adds up to the inexplicable things that you're talking about from last night, right? Like, you can be a deeply flawed team that lacks talent to be a Stanley Cup contender and not give performances like that, right? Yeah. You know, it doesn't flow, but then you'll play like that for a whole 60 minutes, basically. I mean, I know they got shots in the third, but whatever.
Oh, yeah, they were awful in the third.
Yeah.
That 4-1 goal after your absolute, you know, clown car 4-1 goal gets disallowed.
Yeah.
That looked like a team that quit. In that moment and on that play, like, I know people were mad at Hronek's coverage, but the options left to him
and
by who the forwards covered.
Like, so little resistance down the ice for Bo Horvat.
Oh, and it's Bo Horvat. Like, yeah. Okay, so first off, how do you, the Bo Horvat Country Club people who've been texting into our inbox over the years, explain this club getting outworked by that margin by Bo Horvat's team in mid-November? Think you all owe an apology. We're accepting them in the 650 Dunbar Lumber inbox. Your takes are bad. You are wrong.
You're so good at building bridges.
And you owe me personally, but also this program an apology. So use the 650 Dunbar Lumber text line and try to do better in your life going forward. Secondly, the talk it commentary. I wasn't at the game last night. Harmon Dial mm-hmm. was covering the game for The Athletic. He wrote the three takeaways, which you can check out at The Athletic. So I come home and I throw on the television to watch Tockett's post-game commentary and also just rewatch parts of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife sits down and hears Tockett's statement. Now, my wife works in like corporate HR. And you know, she very rarely listens to Rick Tockett. She's not a hockey fan. She has like zero. She's coming to this completely without context. And her take was about Tockett being like, don't ask me about individual mm-hmm. players. I'm not going to talk about it. She was like, you would never accept this in a corporate environment. Like, I get that he's taking accountability, but if something failed in terms of a group project or whatever, and you were asking questions about why and how the individual contributors, like, you'd owe your boss an answer. She's like, I literally would consider disciplining an employee who like had failed to meet their sales targets and wouldn't get into why. Now, look, I don't feel that way. We all know what Tockett was doing. He was trying to deflect.
And to be fair, the thing was, it wasn't as if he was like, I'm not going to explain what I did wrong. He was trying to take the responsibility.
But the point is,
right?
You know, in I think her point is, if you're discussing what went wrong in a project, like an after action review, getting into the why matters too. You can't just be like, I'm not going to do the why.
Mm-hmm.
That's so look, I just thought it was a funny perspective because it's so outside the realm. Like, we all understand that Rick Tockett was coming in and doing the, I'm going to deflect attention off my team thing. Right. By being the one who's responsible and saying I got out coached and, you know, I think probably to some measure, too, giving himself the ability to duck what he might have said if he truly got into it.
So everyone, the reaction was all like, oh, well, he's just, you know, and look, there's an element to this as well, right, where he's trying to deflect blame from his players, give them a little bit of space, take it on himself. And certainly when you hear him say, you know, I got out coached and all that, it's on me, him apologizing, it has that element. But the specific thing about don't ask me about individual players, and you listen to him, right, because he goes on to say, like, you all saw it. I think there's an element there of him saying, like, I don't want to be put in a situation where I might say something I regret, because he was obviously and understandably extremely frustrated and disappointed with what he saw.
Yes.
So I think it was like self-preservation. I don't want to risk saying something that's going to sound really bad.
There was an element of that. And it was remarkable because we really do not get very many moments like that from Tockett. Anyway, I just wanted to pass along my wife's commentary because I thought it was such an interesting slice of insight from someone outside the realm that we usually occupy. Like, we're so used to being like, yeah, it makes sense that they wouldn't want to discuss that, or it makes sense that they'd handle it that way. But in the real world, you know, an explanation that's like, I'm not going to talk about individual players, this was on me entirely, and I'm not getting into it, doesn't actually fly. Just worth retaining some outside perspective when we sort of can get myopic in discussing hockey itself.
Yeah, and so, look, we got a lot of texts coming in here. And
including Tanbeer not capitulating,
that's
by the way.
Right.
Capitulate, Tanbeer, you were wrong.
Our favorite urologist, Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texts in, the worst, what? You don't have a favorite urologist?
I do now.
I didn't before I started working here, but now I sure do. If I'm ever in Ontario and I need emergency urology services, I know exactly who I'm calling. Anyways, Mike texts in, the worst part was that top to bottom for basically the whole game, the effort was egregiously bad. And that's the point I'm making, right? Like, okay, we'll get into some of the flaws of the roster. We've talked about that a lot. Obviously, coming into the season, you can have the worst, most flawed roster in the world, and that doesn't excuse a poor effort from the team. And he goes on to say, even when they knew it was bad, they couldn't figure out how to turn it around. Players and coaches, it's both baffling and alarming. And yeah, that element of there's no mystery, right? It's not as if they were like, oh, what's going on? We're not playing, you know, are we playing well or what? What's going on here? I was on the intermissions with Bick last night and we spoke to JT Miller after the first. And, you know, of course, part of it is we're talking about him setting up Lekkomäki and everything. But we also asked him like about the game and he said, I don't understand what's going on, basically. Like, this is another first period where we're coming out flat at home. And he says, we've talked about it a lot. I don't get why it's still happening. And at that point, it's 1-1. You're going into the break. Okay, you played not well at all in the first, but you've got every opportunity. That's a tie game. You're at home. You've got every opportunity to do something differently. And instead, they play even worse in the second period. Fall down by multiple goals early. And then from that point on, it's 3-1. You're on home ice. That's when you should be able to tilt the ice the most. Right? Like, that to me is always one of the hallmarks of a really good team is, okay, so bad bounces happen, you get down at home, it happens, that's when you should really be able to dictate the game. The exact opposite of that happened for the remainder of the second period. And I just, it's the kind of thing where who knows what's going on in that room? Who knows what the message to the coaching staff is? Yes, you can point to roster construction, talent things, but that doesn't explain all of it. That doesn't even explain most of what we saw last night.
No.
Complete lack of effort and urgency.
Well, that's the thing. Everything failed all at once. The performance was so catastrophic that you can't actually do the, like, Myers and Soucy aren't moving the puck well enough thing. Like, you can do that if you want. You're not wrong. But it doesn't explain why they played so poorly last night relative to, you know, even some of their other losses, right? That was one of those mid-November games where one team shows up and wants it an awful lot more. And there was a lot of sort of countervailing wins here, right? The Islanders are in a spot where they need to start racking up wins. The Islanders are also a lot better than their record looks like, as we were talking about prior to the program or prior to the game yesterday. The Islanders were coming off a loss, so they needed to like get this road trip back on the rails if it's going to be the sort of bounce back road trip where, you know, you start to make hay. Plus, you know, Bo Horvat's played his old former team how many times now? Three? And they haven't won?
Yeah.
So there's a guy in the room who wants it. You put all those sort of things together, those factors together, and I think the Islanders produced one of those efforts that maybe was like 5%, 10% better than what you typically get from a team on the road in mid-November. And the Canucks were not prepared to match it. Mm-hmm. And I'd add this, you know, Canucks have the Lekkomäki thing going on, right? Where new guy integrating into the lineup, you've got the Dakota Joshua, the emotional lift of Dakota Joshua, a teammate, well-liked teammate who was diagnosed with testicular cancer in the summer, had surgery to deal with it, making his return to the lineup. There's a huge emotional sort of, not like it's burden's the wrong word, but there's an emotional complication, right, of that, even if it's a positive emotion. You've got Besser. I'm sure there's people who are pretty concerned in that room about Besser's health and status and on and on. Canucks looked flat. And I don't know, like, if it was a sort of an emotional flat or if it was, hey, look, we're 8-3-3 and we're cruising now and we scored early and it's probably going to be easy. We're not even facing Sorokin. But they were completely flat from a, like, they weren't mentally sharp. Their effort level sagged and on and on. And so for all of that, I'm not, like, worried.
Well, worried about what?
I'm not worried that this isn't a playoff team.
Like, I'm not worried that the bottom is going to fall out. You know what I mean? And that they're going to finish with 85 points.
Correct.
I do think the fact that this isn't a one-off, and even the factors you just outlined, right?
No,
like, I go back to the Hughes Bowl. That's another game where it's like, okay, early season, out-of-conference opponent, there's reasons not to be excited for it, except that your captain's brothers are in town, and you know it's a big deal for him. And that was also a really bad effort. And then, as you said, you lay out the situation with Dakota Joshua, your guy who has been through the battles with you in the playoffs last year, coming back from a really scary situation, and there's no intensity to match that.
Yep.
That's Edmonton on the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's
playoff rematch.
Yep.
No intensity to match that situation. So, look, is it a fatal flaw that can't possibly be corrected? No. You heard Rick talk it. He's not given up. He's not throwing his hands up. He's taking accountability. He's going to keep working at it, trying to find solutions. But the inability to get your intensity to where it needs to be for these games, right, it's concerning. Again, concerning that they're going to be an 85-point team? No, not necessarily, but it's something that has to be corrected. Not impossible to correct, but it's a big problem right now. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And this is sort of, I guess that's part of it too. The Canucks were so motivated to not have a letdown.
Mm-hmm.
They were so doubted throughout last season, right? And so they were able to keep up this preternatural level of like try-hardness over the course of a campaign. And, you know, you want to understand why a 98-point true talent team gets 109 points. Or why a 98 true talent team gets 89 points, like that gap. Often it's explained by who's giving that extra 5% in 7 to 10 additional regular season games over the course of the year. The Canucks had that in spades. Maybe they don't have that this year.
And
maybe that's a concern, but also maybe it doesn't matter that much. I don't know.
It doesn't matter if they find it. You know what I mean? If they're able to find it at some point, then it doesn't matter. But if you can't find it, then it matters in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, so long as they find it for the playoffs. You know, I just don't come out of that game concerned. And the home road...
Is this a team, though, that has built up the goodwill to say, like, oh, they'll be able to flip the switch for the playoffs? That thought process makes me pretty nervous. I think you want to find it well before the playoffs.
Well, yeah, but I don't even think we're not seeing a switch flipped. I mean, we're seeing this team, like, they were great against Calgary two nights earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just seeing some inconsistency, you know? And like, the home stuff, the home road stuff, I mean, that's just bounces. They've still outshot their opponents 5-on-5 at home on home ice. Like, maybe there are some more distractions, but I don't know. I'm overall still impressed by where this team is at. I'm not worried that the offense isn't clicking the way it was never going to click the way like last season. Mm. Like that was never going to be sustainable. I think they've improved in that area. Last night was just a brutal effort. They just got outworked thoroughly and outclassed as a result. I don't know. If we see it happen a couple, like, I guess I'd add this. It's not like they got outworked against the Devils. They got punished off the rush by a team that's absolutely a contender.
Which
level
is
team.
Why I would say last night was worse.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Edmonton too. They were flat early. They fell behind. They battled back, and then they got stomped in the third period. That wasn't an effort thing. I didn't think they stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought they got beat by a better team. Last night was an effort thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's hard for me to connect that to like the Calgary disappointment or the New Jersey game or Carolina. This was something we just haven't seen from this team in like 120 games. And so, I don't know, you're going to have a night like that. If we see them have another couple nights like this, I'm definitely going to start, you know, pounding the table and doing my ranting and raving thing. I just don't think we're there yet.
All right, let's go right to the lineup notes section of the whiteboard. As we mentioned, the Canucks are on the ice for practice at UBC right now. And our guy, Brendan Batchelor, who will join us later, he's there. He's taking it all in. So first, he notes that Kevin Lankinen and Vincent Desharnais not on the ice for Canucks practice at UBC. So we'll see if we get an update on that. Maintenance day, whatever the case may be, on both of those players. Again, that's Kevin Lankinen and Vincent Desharnais. For the lines, per Brendan Batchelor, maybe not as much of a shuffle as some people would have thought, but I'll go through them here. JT Miller remains centering Pugh Suter and Lekker Mäki on the top line.
Sorry, we didn't talk about the funniest part of last night.
Is it?
Which was JT Miller discussing Lekker Mäki's goal.
Right? In the postgame?
Yeah, asked to give a description of it, right? And he said, you know, I entered the zone, I passed it to him, he shot, it was a goal. I'm really happy for him. There is just nothing funnier in the world than someone dejectedly talking about how happy they are.
Just in general, hockey players and hockey players and hockey coaches, because this happens, right? Like, it was a milestone night for one of your teammates, right? They scored their 300th goal, but you also lost or something, right? But the writer still has to get the quote about the good thing. You know what I mean? Like, that happens with some regularity. And that happened to Hughes and Miller last night, both in their postgame scrums. Asked about Lekker Mäki, asked about Dakota Joshua coming back. And it's always pretty tough, right? Because they're so dejected and they're so bummed out that they lost. And then it's like, but that was awesome. Yeah, I'm so glad. Yeah, then that one was pretty funny from JT. Okay, the lineup per Brendan Batchelor at practice on Friday for the Canucks. As I mentioned, JT Miller still with Pugh Suter and Lekker Mäki. Elias Pettersson with Jake DeBrusk. And new addition to the top six, Kiefer Sherwood on the right wing for that line. The third line from last year, reunited. Dakota Joshua, Teddy Bluger, Connor Garland skating together on the third line, which leaves Danton Heinen, Atu Ratu, and Nils Höglander on the fourth line. And Batch says that the D pairs are, quote, rotating through at the moment.
And no Kevin Lankinen and Vincent DeHarnais. So that's partially why perhaps the defense pairs are something are somewhat in a blender. I think the defense pairs are what we're most interested in seeing, to be totally honest with you, right?
That's the probably the hot button area coming out of last night.
Should be, right?
And a little bit of tweaks to the, I guess three of the lines are different. So fairly significant tweaks to the forward lines. I do think it's telling that going back to kind of the security blanket of Bluger with Joshua and Garland together in particular, right? Like, what's this team searching for in some ways? If you want to use a sports cliche, they're searching for an identity. What was a big part of their identity last year? It was that line and that combination of Joshua and Garland. So I think that's pretty telling from Rick Tocch, and we'll see if we get a little bit more information.
What was their identity? Everything going their way. That was their identity, man.
Yeah, but in the second half, it was great defense as well. It was.
For sure.
It was absolutely.
Oh, I'm not saying that was the only thing. Mm-hmm. They played well. I think they're playing mostly pretty well this season. Like, they've had some defensive gaps that weren't there certainly toward the second half of last year, but you know, is their defensive game better in the first 15 this year than it was last season? Probably. It's at least comparable.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to,
when you're not shooting 18%, everything looks an awful lot more difficult,
right? But that's not like the goals against aren't connected to that. It's the save percentage.
Well, sure. But they're sub 900 at 5-on-5. They haven't had Demko, you know, like they haven't been as healthy. Right? Like, all of these small little edges have been sort of whittled away a little bit in terms of why this team managed to put up goal differentials like they were the 1980s Oilers for 30 games last season. Right? People got carried away with that, but that doesn't mean that they're not a good team. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, of course.
The fact is that they've withstood a bunch of injuries and a lot, and managed to still like sit second in the Pacific, despite an awful lot less going their way from a luck perspective.
And to that point, as we go to the playoff and the standings update, if you're a believer in Dom's model, 94% chance for the Canucks to make the playoffs.
Yeah,
like, they're one of the top teams in the league now, that rating.
But I will say, Dom's model struggles to measure regression. Dom's model went into the season viewing the Canucks as a no doubt about it elite team, because Dom's model doesn't know that the Canucks were historically lucky last season and were unlikely to repeat that, right? Like, Dom's model is not built on that. Right. So I do think we're seeing that. And I do think there's at least reason for skepticism about whether or not the Canucks are an elite team based on what we've seen. But I don't think there's any cause for like concern that they're not a very good team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, good to very good. Yeah.
I think a very good team.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. They're going to, you know, flirt with 100 points as like a fat part of the bell curve outcome. That's a very good team. No.
That's a pretty good team. Would you call like a 98 point team?
Why are you doing the
semantics
thing to me?
Would you call a 98 point team a very good team?
Yeah, most of the time.
I'll call it a good team. Very good. I don't know about that. I don't know. Like, who had 98 points last year? LA? I don't know. They're a very good team last year.
Did they even get to 98?
Maybe they didn't.
Tampa had 98.
They're very good.
Yeah, that's a little different.
They weren't very good last year, though.
Yeah, see?
but Vegas did. They were very good.
Nashville had 99.
Yeah,
LA had 99. That's like good. You're a good team. Yeah, not a very good team.
I mean, there's nothing magic about 98. Your fact is that you're going to find some very good teams that have 98 points.
That's true.
And you're going to find some
teams
that have more.
Apparently every day one of us has to find a really stupid hill to die on. And I found it. I got it out of the way early. They play twice over the weekend. You have a betting update for us here going in. Chicago, Connor Bedard tomorrow on Hockey Night in Canada.
I don't have one ready for you, but I'm sure I can pull something up.
No, sure.
Look, the Chicago, another get right spot. One thing that the Canucks have been fortunate about this season is it feels like all of these performances, like the Carolina Devils twofer, and then you go out on the road and face the three California teams with the toughest of those California teams coming last on the trip. It's like This team's had some nice insulation.
They sure have.
The Canucks are pretty heavily favored. They're minus 260 against the Chicago Blackhawks, plus 210 for the Blackhawks on the money line. Over-under is set at 5.5. Why would you take the under at this point when you're watching this Canucks team play? They're surrendering too many chances. And no player props are set yet, so I don't exactly know the price on Bedard to score in his hometown. But I'd bet he does.
All right.
I think Bedard's going to score at least one.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We got lots more to get into. We can dive into some of the specifics. Unlike Rick Tocchet, maybe we can talk about some of the individual performances from that game last night. You can keep sending your texts in as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. All right, we'll take a break here. More Canucks talk on the other side here on Sportsnet 650.